Today's show is brought to you by RacingPicks.com. This is a fabulous place to get free racing analysis and, as the name suggests, picks. I'm going to be writing a special column with my thoughts on Sunday at Saratoga. So easy to get. Just go to RacingPicks.com. You click on the expert picks window and you have an opportunity to just give your email, and then you'll have access to some really cool content from the likes of me, Matt Bernier, Andrew Champagne. And if you like our shows and you want to support us, support our partners. You can do that by signing up for an all-free RacingPicks.com account. You're not going to get bombarded with emails. You're just going to be able to have access to some of this great content. Check it out, RacingPicks.com. Hello and welcome to the Racing Picks podcast. This is our Travers show. It's Friday, August 7th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you from the DG Flophouse in Saratoga. Not quite the DG Lounge over at the racetrack, which is just a little less than a mile away from where I sit right now, but not a bad place to be sitting and chatting about races this weekend. We've got three very special guests today, and we're going to kick things off with a guy I'm very excited to have back on the airwaves. You've heard him on with us before. You heard him recently on a fantastic must-seek-out episode of JK Plus One. He's a fantastic handicapper in his own right. He's actually the first person I know of who ever did horse racing internet audio. More importantly, he's the voice of the Kentucky Derby from Churchill Downs. It's Travis Stone. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How's everything going this summer?
Things are good. Things are good. It's weird. I'm not going to lie, but it's we're making the best of it. You know, we've had some fun socially distanced viewing parties. We've got the Travers. It's a, you know, stakes laden card. Very excited to talk with you all about it. And Travis, I think we should just dive right in and take a look at, because we've got a lot of racing to talk about. It starts off with a race that goes as number seven on Saturday, 3:42 Eastern, the Grade 1 Ballerina, 3 and up, fillies and mares going 7 furlongs. A lot of storylines in this one. Where do you see your money going?
I might hold on to it for a little bit, just because I don't really have a strong opinion in here, with the exception of I do think this is what Serengeti Empress is best at, which will be the sort of the one-turn dirt sprint type scenario. I mean, her test last year where she went toe-to-toe with Covfefe was one of the most exciting races I think we've all ever seen at Saratoga. And she's been stretched out since then. I don't blame Tom for doing that. She's a horse that's talented and fast, and when she gets to the front, she can keep going. But this is probably the right scenario for the cutback, second off the freshening. She was sent in the fleur-de-lis last time, I think just to try and get the jump on Midnight Bizou. And just wasn't herself that day. There's a chance that she has lost her way a bit and that she's not going to be the same filly coming back this summer. But I'm willing to see and find out whether or not that to be the case, because I think she's the fastest in here. I think Bella Keena's fine. She's a good horse, maybe a little bit on the overrated side, always gets bet. But I think she fits this race as well. I didn't have any clever opinions in here. I think they're both logical horses to sort of weave on through with.
Are you concerned about the draw for Serengeti Empress? I feel like this means like the break is the whole race for her. And I worry that even if she does get out of there, Cookie Dough will keep her honest enough that things are just going to set up and or fall into the lap of Bella Fina, who's perfectly drawn in the four hole. How do you see the pace shaking out as far as Serengeti Empress goes?
I think that's fair. I remember last summer she drew the rail. I think it was like three races in a row. And she was fine in all of them. She ran well in each of those starts. So I don't think the rail is a problem for her necessarily. She's going to have to break sharply. There's no two ways about it. So I think that's definitely a concern. And, you know, I hear you on Cookie Dough. Johnny V is not a super send rider, though. He's more of, he made his bones, so to speak, sitting that Pletcher stalking outside type trip, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know if he's necessarily going to be keen on going toe-to-toe with her. And I don't think they necessarily would be worried about her, because she has sort of backed up badly in her last couple of starts. So they might look at her as sort of a forgotten commodity in a way. So Yeah, we're talking about this race as if I have a huge opinion. I don't. I mean, I think these two, Bellafina and Serengeti Empress, be 1-2 in some sort of combination down the stretch, and we'll see who's better tomorrow.
The other question about Bellafina, who I picked and am excited about getting things started off with, is this stat of her being 12-for-12 in the exacta in California and 0-for-4 with a lone third elsewhere. I feel like it's a sign of confidence, and I'm not holding it against her that connections have decided to come to this spot. But I couldn't really argue with anybody who said they want to see her prove it on the road before they're wagering. I'm hoping that narrative just gives us a little tiny bit of juice in the price regarding Bellafina. But what do you think of that type of narrative angle when it comes to Bellafina?
You know, her cotillion last year, where she was off the board, she finished fourth, beaten 9 lengths or so, was sensational. That was a massive pace. And I'm not going to hold that fourth place finish against her. If she had any sort of pace in her that suited her a little bit more, she's on the board and suddenly that stack goes out the window, right? Because she has an on the board finish. But hey, look at the whole California shipping east thing. That happens all the time. It's a different type of racing out here than it is out there. The surfaces are different. The racing style is different. And so it's something you gotta factor into consideration.
Let's move on to race number 8, Travis. It is the Grade 3 Troy for 4-year-olds and up, going 5.5 on the Saratoga turf. This is a race where I do not trust the favorites and want to try to get clever. Am I overthinking it, though? Is it going to be Imprimis and Pure Sensation in some form? Or do you think this is a spot where maybe we can get creative?
I'm actually going to get creative, first off, because I think these horses are hard to separate. Imprimis, as you mentioned, had a pretty good trip in the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint last year, but is off this layoff and is drawn inside. It's going to have to be super sharp to even get position early. A little skeptical whether or not the horse can do that off such a freshening, so I think that's a fair question. Has Sheki Shabazz lost a step? He was running big numbers several starts ago, and his few most recent starts have been a little bit on the slow side, so I'm a little bit worried about that. Pure Sensation is a horse that is more than capable of running numbers big enough to win this race and is fast enough to win this race, obviously, but again, last two starts, subpar for his overall career profile. So yeah, I'll be honest with you, I'm dancing around a little bit in here, but won't be surprised if one of them win. I think this is a spread race. I sort of want to survive this one.
What number would you land on if I held your feet to the fire and said, give me a top pick?
I might play American Sailor just because the horse is in form, is going to have inside speed. I think Tyler Gaffalione, he came to Churchill a couple years ago, and I don't want to say I was not impressed, but he was a hyped rider. And his first year at Churchill, he's trying to find business and find his way. But in his second year this year, he has been awesome. And I just think this is he's one of the top riders in the country and arguably even flies a little bit under the radar. It is sort of with the headlines going to the Ortizes and the Mike Smiths and Rosarios types of the world. So I think Gaffalione's a rider that you can have a lot of confidence in. I think this horse is in form and has improved a little bit and third off to freshening. And I think he's live at a big price.
I'm with you, my friend. I put him on top in my Twin Spires expert picks, and I do think he has the opportunity to be the speed of the speed, especially if Pure Sensation is a little long in the tooth and maybe not going to be able to put the kind of pressure on him early, and maybe Gaffalione could get American Sailor to shake loose. I was also going to use, and I don't love the morning line price, but I'm wondering if we maybe get a bit of a drift on number 7, Chewing Gum, who I don't think will be positioned anywhere forward, obviously, just looking at the PPs and pace figures, but does have some big back numbers, and especially if that number were to drift up. I want some 2s and 7s on my tickets, and the favorites, yeah, maybe I see the point that obviously they deserve their place in the market in theory, but more along the lines of backups for me. I'm with you about survive and advance as a general approach, and my presses will actually be ones at prices. We'll see if we can get anything interesting to happen there in the Troy as we move along to our 9th race on Saturday, the Grade 3 Way at going 1.5 miles on the inner turf. And I was super duper boring in here, Travis, so I'll kick it to you first to see if you had anything clever.
Unfortunately, no. I think Mississippi, I mean, Grand Motion was firing on all cylinders in the early spring and summer, you know, COVID-type times. He was winning every race at Churchill. and obviously it's cooled off a little bit. It's hard to maintain those big numbers when your horses are firing fresh. So I'm a little bit against Mississippi. Certainly can win. I think my sister Nat sets up well for this race. The pace was slow last time. She's second off the layoff in here. I don't buy any sort of narrative around Chad Brown, who's a fantastic trainer, and I think she's one of the ones I'd want to use along with Olympic Games. And Mississippi would be, she's not a backup. She's better than a backup. She'd sort of like in an ABC structure, she'd be a B rather than a C, you know. So I think I would use her, but I'd lean a little bit more on my sister Nat and Olympic Games in here. Nothing clever.
Yeah, Mississippi, I was hoping would just get the right kind of trip, and I was going to make my technical top pick, but I certainly see the case for my sister Nat, who, looking at the last couple of races, is probably a little bit better than the bare form suggests and should be ready for a nice forward move. For me, it's 1-4, 4-1 in any order. Did you give the 7 Fool's Gold any count in here? I just like the fact that we were dealing with one who's second off the break, going back to the course and distance of her best work.
She's not impossible. I mean, I think last time she was close to a pretty slow to develop pace in the New York and didn't really have much punch from there. And, you know, Chad's good about getting horses ready for second off the layoff type scenarios. And I guess you could argue that she's going to offer a little bit of value, but I feel like she's the type, you know, in a field of 8 to 10 horses, you still want to get 10 or 12 to 1 on. And just with the smallest field, I don't think she's going to offer the right price.
I think that's right. I'll probably make my technical third selection, but not have much of any on the actual tickets. I'm just going to be pretty stick with those two, and again, just sort of get through it. The 10th race is the Grade 1 Test. 3-year-old filly, 7 furlongs on the dirt, annually one of the races I look forward to with this meet. And we've got a really interesting potential showdown between Gamin and Venetian Harbor in this one. But there are cases to be made for others in this field. I'm going to go a little crazy and use a little trainer angle type play to make a case for Mrs. Danvers to split the top two and even use her a bit on top, just with the thought that this might be the type of pace scenario where a theoretically too slow horse can step up and get it done. Given the hands that she's in, I'm expecting a peak effort, and I'm also expecting her to get a setup for the first time and maybe be able to take a big step forward. But obviously, she's really going to have to against those two serious rivals to her outside, not to mention the rest of what's signed on in this spot. Yeah. Travis, how do you see this year's test?
Yeah, this is I think this is one of those types of races where you just have to gamble, because it's unlikely that Gamin and Venetian Harbor are 1-2 under the wire. They do not have complementary running styles. They have the same running style. They both want to go. And there's no chance Gamin's not in the lead. Bob Baffert doesn't win races going from last to first very often. So Gamin's going. The question is whether or not Venetian Harbor goes with her. And it might not even matter. I think Venetian Harbor's a really nice filly. She's been a little bit exposed, though, now. She's been twice beaten by horses that are solid animals. So she's certainly in the top tier of this crop. But Gamin's certainly better. And I think of the two of them, Gamin's more likely to go on. But the whole thing here is that nothing can level a playing field better than a real strong pace scenario, and I'm right there with you. To me, this is one of those scenarios where they're going to go head-and-head early. They're probably going to go fast. 7 furlongs is a hard distance to maintain that sort of pressure and that sort of top speed, and it's going to make them very vulnerable late. And I agree with that. I think Mrs. Danvers is the type of horse that you want to consider to come on and grab a piece. I could even argue that, you know, maybe Perfect Alibi is going to bounce back second off the layoff. Even Up in Smoke, George Weaver's had a great year so far. He's obviously won a lot of big races. This horse was against a slow pace last time. I think she's more than capable of closing for a piece as well. And to me, it's like so many pick 5 tickets are going to go through. And I'm sure you can hear the birds in the background. This is a truly Adirondack experience. That so many tickets are going to lean heavily on horses like Gamin and Venetian Harbor, that if you can slip somebody else in there, and you're going to create a lot of value. And I'm definitely going to have some tickets that beat both of those, arguably with the inside 3, probably leaning on Danvers and Smoke, though, a little bit more.
I definitely get it, and love for tries and supers. There is super wagering despite the small field. If you can somehow get one of those big ones out of the 4, I mean, that's going to take a lot of doing, but it certainly could happen if they go fast enough up front. And Up in Smoke, I think, will be ridden – I think will be ridden to get a piece, just thinking about what even a third in this race would mean for her value. I like that idea very much of messing around in this race, having more of my play go vertically than horizontally in this year's test.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I have so many examples of long shot closes that come on for pieces of big races in history, and those are my favorite types of bets, as you know. I like to find those long shot closes to grab a piece.
Mike Maloney calls them dinkers, those horses that can run third and fourth and deliver extreme value when it comes to your vertical exotics. And I've seen you in action and your ability to get those on the tickets. Yeah. And I'm glad we see that one. I have much more confidence now betting that one after hearing your opinion of it. Okay, Travis, let's talk about the main event on Saturday. It is the Grade One Travers. Sort of really interesting situation where it becomes not only the Midsummer Classic in its own right, but also the last dance before this year's Kentucky Derby. It's being billed as a match between number three, Uncle Chuck, and number six, Tis the Law. Is it as simple as that and those two? We'll start there.
Probably most of the time it is. I think most of the time, but obviously this is horse racing, so there's plenty of scenarios that could play out where it's not. I just think these are two exceptional colts. Tis the Law, in a year that he could have been mismanaged at almost any turn with the gap in racing and the new schedule, he has been managed absolutely perfectly, and he's been maintaining his form. He's forwardly placed. He's got tactical speed. He clearly is a horse that can handle a longer distance. I think he is by far the horse to beat. However, the Belmont Stakes has always been, and you know, that one turn type mile at Belmont was 100% like Tis the Law's game. He's done very well at that scenario both times now. He's got to go another furlong. Looks like he can handle it just fine, but you know, you never know. That 10th furlong is the 10th furlong for a reason. It's often daunting. And so then he has to deal with this horse named Uncle Chuck, who's lightly raced. And we've seen this thing from Baffert before, where he brings horses from the West Coast over in a seemingly sort of weird spot for him, and all of a sudden they pop with a big effort. Of course, we all remember what Arrogate did not too long ago. I watched Uncle Chuck's replays just to get a better sense of him. He has got a stride that is just so long that it almost feels like he's just wanting that 10th furlong, whereas opposed to Tis the Law, you might question whether or not he truly wants the 10th furlong. I definitely think Uncle Chuck wants that 10th furlong. But they're both going to be shortish prices, and I don't really know if I can get excited about betting an exacta box of Uncle Chuck and Tis the Law in a race like the Travers. They are way the horses to beat. It is going to be a fun race to watch. I do have some other ideas, though.
I'm excited to pick your brain about that. For me, this is one where I said on Horse Players Happy Hour with Matt Bernier yesterday, I've been picking splinters out of my behind from sitting on the fence, because as a selection-oriented host, you know, when you do these shows, it's not as interesting radio to come on and talk about, well, at this price I'll do this, and at this price I'll do that. I kind of want to just pick the horse I've been talking about since last August, and that's Tis the Law. But when you see, especially some of the prices around internationally, with a horse like Uncle Chuck as high out as 11-4, it becomes much easier to say, well, look, my pick is Tis the Law, but I'm betting Uncle Chuck. And then all of a sudden you start making no sense at all. So I'm struggling a little bit, and I'm very curious who you might be interested in to either split these two and or maybe get the money in this year's Travers.
You know, that's actually an interesting point, because when I opened up the PPs and sort of like, okay, I'm going to handicap this race, and I look at it and I'm like, man, Uncle Chuck, for all the hype that he's received, he doesn't even have some of the fastest buyers in the race. I mean, Country Grammar ran faster last time, and he's certainly a few points behind Tis the Law. So when you think of it that way, it doesn't surprise me that he maybe has drifted a little bit up more than what you would think he would have coming in. And a horse like Country Grammar, to me, for Chad Brown with a big number and a win over the track, is just going to get overbet almost always. And I thought he sat a really perfect trip in the Peter Pan last time. I think he's a nice horse, and I think he's capable of a lot, but he's just not the right bet for me in a spot like this. However, coming out of that same race, I think Caracaro ran an excellent race in the Peter Pan off the layoff. Had a good spot first turn, sat just off the pace, sort of in a close proximity to Country Grammar, but then had to swing three wide on the entire far turn and fought really hard to the wire. I think of those two, I want him out of the Peter Pan the most. So he would maybe be one of the horses I'm leaning on a little bit in terms of making money in the race. And the other is, and it's no surprise, I think Max Players is a nice colt. And I think he's been handled well by Linda Rice. Again, another where they could have done some of the bigger races in the spring. Instead, she's like, no, we're going to back off and we're going to point for the summer. He was never going to win the Belmont coming off a layoff like that against Tiz de Law, who has had more recent type efforts. But he still ran well. He's very wide on the far turn, came with a run, and now he's tightened up for this second off the layoff. If he runs well in the Travers, I'd actually start to think about him as a real Derby type horse. I don't know if he's going to be quite ready with the second off the layoff scenario to take on, you know, an in-form Country Grammar, an in-form Uncle Chuck, an in-form Tiz de Law. But I certainly think he's capable of closing the gap, and he's going to be five or six times the price of Tiz de Law. So if I were to truly look to bet this race, I'd try and sneak Max Player and Caracaro onto my ticket.
I get it completely. Max Player improved every start, shapes like one who's going to appreciate every inch of ground. I love that idea of him as one to run well here and potentially step up once again on the first Saturday in September. And of the two, Caracaro and Country Grammar, I agree completely. I felt like that was a day where ground loss meant something. And when you view the last race through that lens, Caracaro, I think you can certainly argue, was the better of the two. I would love it if there was a head-to-head Caracaro against Country Grammar. And I'd be right there with you, Travis. Well, I want to thank you, buddy, for coming on and your time today. We'll give an extra shout-out to that Blue Jay who was making all kinds of racket behind you. I don't know what he was on about, but I guess he just wanted to be on the radio. But really appreciate your time today. Hopefully get a chance to see you while you're up here in the Adirondacks, and if not, hopefully very soon. We look forward to hearing your voice on our simulcast feed for Churchill Downs very soon, and would love to talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, man. Good luck this weekend.
I want to take a moment here to talk about our friends from StableDuel. Very excited to be working with them and doing some creative stuff as well. We've got this Beat Spencer promotion coming up, and it's tied to these four Lone Star Park contests that are happening Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, the last 4 days of the meet. It costs $5 to play. If you play in all four of these contests and you finish ahead of Spencer, each time you finish ahead of Spencer, you get another entry into a special game where there's going to be $250 on the line, and the only catch is you have to play in all four. But it's a chance to get a little free roll, to get a little action from Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Our partners at Lone Star Park, our partners at StableDuel, we wanted to be a part of it as well. So we've got Spencer involved. Of course, there's great games all weekend. You can check them all out through StableDuel.com or via the StableDuel app. I said it earlier in the show. I'll say it again. You like our shows, you want to support us, support our sponsors. StableDuel is one of them, a one-of-a-kind way of playing the races that blends traditional horse playing and fantasy sports. Check it out, StableDuel.com or via the StableDuel app. For our next segment, I'm very happy to have on a guest I've been meaning to have on for quite some time. I'm a big fan of his work up at Woodbine. He is Jason Portuondo. Welcome to the In the Money Airwaves. How are you today, buddy?
I like it. That's a nice way of saying it. We haven't forgotten about you, right? No, I appreciate it, guys. Love to be on. I've heard a lot about the podcast, and I said, you know, one of these days I'm going to get there. Today is that day. Thank you.
Oh my goodness, you are too kind, and we appreciate, you know, flattery will get you everywhere around here, especially if we can share lunch the next time I'm up through Toronto. It looked like a delicious veal sandwich you were working on there.
Yeah, you know what? There are a lot of great spots around to get veal sandwiches, but nothing is authentic as Nona. So Nona, you know what? I even tell my wife, sorry, you're not as good as your mother. You're okay, but you're not as good as your mom. So I will share some of that with you, being of Italian descent as well, next time you're here.
Oh, fantastic stuff. I want to just do a quick background question. Yeah. I mean, folks know you from seeing you on the simulcast feed, but I'm curious to get a little bit more of your history. It seems like everybody in this business has their origin story of how they got into racing in the first place. What's yours?
So my uncle, my dad, both actually owned harness horses. So that was my first introduction to horses, period. Probably about 6 or 7 years of age. So I started working at Greenwood back in the day, the old harness racetrack in downtown Toronto by the lakeshore. started with the harness horses. Then I gravitated towards the thoroughbreds. I met up with Kevin Attard as a young kid. His dad, Tino, is still a trainer as we speak. Longer story shorter, Kevin introduced me to the backstretch. I started working with the thoroughbreds and never looked back. And then I have a TV background as well. I worked at Sportsnet, which is basically like the American version of ESPN. Sure. We also have racing on TSN now. So it's the perfect marriage of TV and racing. And you know, once racing gets in your blood, forget it. It's always there.
Fantastic stuff. We'll talk much more. I could ask you six follow-ups based on your background, but we're not going to do that today because I know, you've got broadcasting to do, and I want to get to these races on Saturday at Woodbine, especially the last race. We'll pause and do plenty on this $295,000 carryover that's a mandatory payout in the Super High Five. But let's back up a little bit and start off with Woodbine's seventh race on Saturday. We've got two-year-old maidens going six furlongs on the synthetic. We've got fillies here. Just curious to know how you were thinking of getting things kicked off in this late pick four on Saturday.
Double whammy. I mean, we're talking two-year-olds, so they change from day to day, week to week in terms of their races, right? And then maidens. So it's a tough way to kick things off, but I'm really just going to lean on the race from, back on July the 4th, Independence Day, for you guys. Happy, hopefully you had a good one. I really feel like horses coming out of that race where Silent Mamba was able to get the win that day, I think secretly, is really going to benefit from that opener. And I don't want to go back to that race because I actually had the winner that day and then the horse jumped the rail and everybody was okay. But my horse was going to win that day. Secretly, I think, slow start, was gaining ground, galloped out really well. So now you go from 5/8 stretching out or 4.5 to now the 3/4. Some horses, it's a bit of a question mark. I think secretly he's going to enjoy that. I like that horse on top. Hatmaker Holiday also comes out of that same race. I'm going to include that filly. A couple things bother me, though. Actually, three things. One, Contreras leaves. So that in itself is kind of interesting. The blinkers go on. Maybe that's a good thing, even though Carol doesn't have the greatest of numbers with that type of move. And her maiden second start, not the greatest as well, but Patrick Husband sees fit to ride. The works are good enough. I'll use that one in second. And then speaking of Contreras, you'll find him with the 2/4 My Elbi. And this is a horse that's trained by Laura Krasaskaite. And this one gets blinkers on, and this one gets Lasix, and has been tearing up the track in the morning. So two-year-olds, I'm going to spread a little bit, not overly deep, but I'll use 2/3/11, or 2/3/10, I should say, in that opening leg.
I'm definitely with you on secretly. I always think it's interesting when a maiden gets bet hard like that and doesn't break. It suggests to me that there's more speed than we saw on debut. And I think because of that, maybe we get a little bit of juice in the price and we can get all of that 3/1. And I love your case on the 2, and we'll be including your other two runners as well. Let's move on to the second leg in this sequence, race number 8. We've got a 3 and up allowance going 6 furlongs on the turf. I had one I wanted to run by you in this spot. Number 2, Roman Doro. I thought was a little bit interesting off what I thought was a pretty rough trip. First time off, a long layoff. And I thought she might be able to go a little bit better and get a good trip just in behind the speed. Maybe the tail of two trips could make the difference for Roman Doro in this spot. But how did you see it?
Good news for you. That's my 4th pick. I went 3 deep. You know the rest of that story. It always happens, right? So, that's a horse coming out of just a troubled trip. I mean, a bunch of them on the inner course that day, just nowhere to go. And this one was crashing and banging along with a few others. The most fruitful combination here at Woodbine this meet, Kimura Cassie. So you can never go wrong there. I didn't include her. Hopefully it doesn't come back to bite me in the butt. Betwixting just looks to be a logical play in there, getting back to turf for Marty Drexler, who, by the way, is the leading turf trainer here at Woodbine. So that's crazy to say that, because for the longest time, he was known as a guy who couldn't win a race, couldn't buy a win on the turf, but now he's got 9, and he is number 1. So Betwixing, I think more of a stalking-style type of role will help out this horse's chances. She's just kind of a formidable foe. Revivalist, the speed that one brings to the table. Winning on the inner last time, loses Hernandez to Betwixing, but Contreras is going to ride for Norm McKnight. Combination we don't see a lot of. Here's my X factor. Short summer dress. This horse has been on the grass before, two back. It was a bit of a speed and fade. I say a bit because the horse, even though finished fourth, only got beat a length. Last time out, missed the break, and then all of a sudden was able to chase instead of being a chasee. I'm hoping Emma decides to use that role once again, because obviously going three quarters on turf, there's going to be a ton of speed. I hope she sits and stalks. Short summer dress, I think, has a chance to be a bit of a wild card. 12-1 on the line. I'm going to go 4-7-9 in terms of my late pick four.
I like it. Let's talk about this ninth race. We've got three and up claimers, 25,000, 7.5 on this inner turf, which, as you pointed out, I've noticed can the tight turns, it can produce some trips. And we've got a this race just left me scratching my head because there's so many runners second off a layoff who I'm expecting to improve. I'm just throwing up my hands with this one, Jason, and betting whatever you tell me. What did you come up with?
Oh, jeez. Good luck with that. You know what? Florida One is a horse that last time I liked quite a bit, just fell a little bit shy. Here we go again, Marty Drexler. Drexler was actually 1-2 that day because Deep Freeze and Hernandez was able to win. Now you get Hernandez on this one, but this is where I push all my chips into the middle of the table. Peter, I am all in on Saltini. I like this horse a lot. Saltini's going to be my best bet of the day. This is where I'm just going to say I'm going to single a horse. I know it's a crazy race to do so, but I look at it like this. There is going to be a ton of speed in this race. And it's 7.5 furlongs, so it's a bit of a sprint. But it's a two-turn sprint, and Saltini looked really good in that Woodbine debut. And I really feel like getting back to grass, even though I played him again most recently on synthetic, and it was just kind of a type of effort. Getting back to grass for Nichols and Hall, I think this horse is going to be stalking the speed. Got to be close because on that inner, it's all about speed. That is my key to the late pick four sequence, all in on Saltini.
I like that case, and we've seen on the inner turf where, I guess presumably because of the tight turns, the riders are extra aggressive, and it can set up for ones coming from just off the pace. Saltini does have the best-looking late sectional figures in the field, so I like that idea. You've definitely talked me into making that one, if not a single, at least a big press.
Yeah, well, you know what, too? Oh, okay, okay. No, I was going to say, just a signal dropped out there. Sorry about that.
You're good.
For me, I look at these tight turns, and you're right, because even when it was a harness track, we always said speed does so well because of those tight turns. But having said that, the stretch on the inner course is deceptively longer than you would think. So it's actually not that bad for closers, but it's just such a speed-induced course because it's always so firm. We haven't had a lot of rain, so speed has been the thing. But Saltini, if he can stay close enough, I think he's got a big-time shot.
Let's move on to our nightcap. This is a race that's going to attract a lot of attention, not just because it's a big competitive field, but we do have 295,000 in carryover in this this jackpot super high five. That this is the mandatory payout day. So even if you're not somebody who usually is looking to chase jackpots, this is the day to try to take it down where you're going to get the extra value. This is a pool that, to begin with, has a 15% takeout. With all that money added, I expect horse players every state where it's legal to be participating in this one. And Jason, we'll start out with who you like best for the top slot to sort of button up our conversation about the pick four. And then let's talk about it from a super high five perspective. Who do you think is going to win this 10th race at Woodbine on Saturday?
Keyword being think, because remember how you just said you weren't sure about that ninth race? Well, let me borrow that phrase here for the 10th. This is a big time head scratcher. I mean, I went up and down this race so many times. I landed on the five words of gold, but not with a lot of conviction. That last race, obviously something went wrong, but it was ugly. Beaten just over 17 lengths. Now the blinkers go on. I'm hoping that helps. Hernandez is going to ride here for Stuart Simon. The drop in for 40. Again, I'm hoping that's going to be a good enough thing. But, you know, we haven't seen this horse since the end of June, so I need a good price. 3-1 on the line is decent enough, but anything lower than that just doesn't make sense. So I'm going to close my eyes, cross my fingers, hope for the best. Words of gold, my top pick, but like I said, not with a lot of conviction.
Interesting side storyline in this spot is the also eligible City Fashion, who is not necessarily going to run, but when you look at the pedigree, this one has some precocity, this first-time starter. Should she sneak in, she might be one to be reckoned with in this spot.
100%. You know, I always keep an eye on horses that draw in off the reserves, and if this one gets in, for sure. You're right. I mean, we started talking about Kimura and Cassie, and this daughter of City Zip, definitely, you know, the works are snappy in the morning time and makes a lot of sense. And that changes the complexion of this race completely if she gets a chance to draw in. So you're right. That definitely is the X factor.
Let's talk about how we're going to fill out for this super high five. Okay. Who are some of the other numbers on your tickets? Maybe something at a bit of a price we could look to key in underneath, or how do you envision playing this super high five with the $295,000 extra in the pot?
Marjorie's Dream, Husbands and Thompson, you know, just got to be a length last time out. That was at this level. Just makes a lot of sense. The figure's good enough. Actually, wouldn't be surprised if she actually goes off as the race favorite. And, you know, just a horse that I think is a must use. If you don't have that one in the top five, good luck, because I think that's a horse that's definitely going to be in there. Some others that intrigue me, you spoke of Kimura. If the Cassie filly doesn't draw in, then Wide Awake for Drexler just looks to be another horse in here that is one that you can lean on. There's a lot of jockey juggling going on in this race. You know, Hernandez gets off that one to ride Words of Gold. Boulanger obviously sidelined with injury, so we understand why he's not riding back, but Wide Awake drops. Hopefully that's going to help. Linda Loves Lace, the 11 horse in here. Something went amiss in that last one. She's definitely not that type to get beat over 30-odd lengths. Wilson doesn't stay, though, so that bothers me a little bit. It's not like she's not riding on the card. I don't think she's got a race horse in this race. No, she doesn't. But that one could totally bounce back. And if she does, I think she's a big-time player. And then I'm going to toss in the firster for Bob Tiller in here, Simple Souvenir. Isabel Wentz, I know she's still looking for that first win. It's going to happen. She does a lot of work with Bob and his horses in the morning. I think when she gets that first win of the meet, it's going to be a firster that is just going to get out of the gate and just keep going. And she's just going to have to, you know, pull on that inside rein a couple of times and then just get to the wire first.
I like it. And I think there's a way you can construct tickets with the five Words of Gold and the three Marjorie's Dream as the keys, who have to be there somewhere in the number, and then feathering in runners like the two, the four, the 11, and the 13. There's a way to construct a pretty manageable super high five ticket and hopefully get a piece of this carryover. With that much money that has to be paid out of this pool, you don't necessarily need to have a major price to unlock what should be an overlaid payout. And with if you can get a clever opinion like Simple Souvenir up in the number, that should unlock things and make it pretty appealing. I'm definitely looking forward to participating on Saturday at Woodbine, but enjoying these Saturday cards as much as anywhere in North American racing. And Jason, been enjoying your work, and look forward to seeing you on TV and having you on these airwaves again soon.
Thank you for the invite. I appreciate it. I'll have the veal ready. Let me know when you're coming.
Done, my friend. Done. Right. Thank you so much, buddy. There's no better time to sign up for a Twin Spires account. Friends of the In the Money podcast can sign up with the code ITM200 to get a risk-free win bet up to $200. Download the Twin Spires app or visit twinspires.com and use the code ITM200 to get your risk-free $200 win bet now. And don't forget that both JK and myself are doing expert picks for Twin Spires. You can get our thoughts on every race at Del Mar, which JK is doing, or Saratoga, which I'm doing. Just click on the little expert picks icon on twinspires.com or via the Twin Spires app. Check it out today, twinspires.com or through the Twin Spires app. Next up on the show, a guest I'm very excited to have on, been meaning to have him for quite some time. We've got him today to talk about Del Mar, what's going on in his life, as well as this Derby future pool number 7. He is from VSiN and Horse Racing Nation, Ron Flatter. Ron, how are you today?
Well, good to be aboard, Pete, but I've had you on my podcast a couple times. You know, you were the one who told me at an NHC a couple years ago when we were talking about how all the podcasters and audio folks, we get along so well. And, you know, in a business that can be a little bit catty, we get along. And you had the great line. You said, hey, listen, if one of us is benefited by the rising tide, it raises us all. And I've used that time and again to explain exactly why it is the podcasters all along.
It's true. I really firmly believe that. And I do remember a great moment out at the NHC at one point where it was me, it was you, we were on Steve Bick's airwaves, and then the Jason Beam came by as well. So we all got to do our little bit of shtick there. There's no doubt. There's no doubt that that there is a camaraderie among horse players who are always, of course, competing at the windows day in, day out. And with us, I think the competition's even friendlier. And that is the correct dynamic. Let's hear a little bit about your show. First of all, where's the best place for folks to find it? And how do you characterize it generally for the audience?
I guess I'm the cheap version of Beam. You know, if you can't afford him, you get me. And they're all free. Now you get pretty much where you get yours, you get mine, you get Jason's, et cetera. So Apple, Google, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, vsin.com/podcasts. And we try to bring out personality. And I think a good example is what we posted today. I got Barclay Tagg on the phone. And as I was preparing to do that interview, I was thinking of the Barclay Tagg that you see before races and after races and that we've seen in gaggles and news conferences. And you ask him a question that requires maybe 25 words or less, and, you know, he'll give you 20 and leave you 5 words worth of. You think, I'm going to be ready with about 100 questions to hopefully get 5 minutes. Oh, my goodness, did I get the opposite experience? He was expansive and relaxed. And just wonderfully raconteurial. It was a terrific 15 minutes that I had with him. And he doesn't know me from Adam. And I've been trying to get him for some months. And he picked up the phone the other day. And it was a wonderful conversation and such good timing because of Tis the Law and the Travers this weekend. So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, he even was telling stories about how his mechanic is complimenting demeanor of Jack Knowlton, of course, from Sakatoga Stable, and a wonderful story about how he got together with Manny Franco and his friendship with Angel Cordero. So, I mean, from Barclay Tagg, a man of supposedly few words, not my experience. And so that's what we try to bring out, get personality, get into some X's and O's. We also have Andy Serling on. If you want personality, of course, you can go overboard just with him. And we rotate through Las Vegas bookmakers and handicappers. And Chris Andrews from the South Point actually does the pick five today for us on the podcast, the late pick five, the all stakes pick five at Saratoga on Saturday. So that's a snapshot. That's a pretty typical episode.
That's fantastic. And that's great about Barclay Tagg because, yes, I mean, I'm familiar with the more laconic version, shall we say, but I know the other version exists. And it's great you were able to capture that. And I encourage everybody to go listen to that. Those are three heavy hitters in Barclay Tagg, Andy Serling, and Chris Andrews. Chris, one of my favorite people, not just in the gambling business, but just favorite people, full stop. And his book, Then One Day, really a classic that also has some great horse racing stories in it.
More than a few. I've tried to have him share more than a few, but of course I don't want to, to be giving away his book on the podcast, So yeah, he's great. And I was fortunate enough to meet him when I moved here 3.5 years ago when I joined VSIN. Him, Vinny Maliulo, Jimmy Vaccaro, that group at the South Point. And then, of course, all the guys around town. Johnny Avello rotates into our handicappers corps. We also have Dwayne Colucci from the Rampart. And so he's also in there. And who am I missing? I'm missing somebody here. Dwayne. No, Vinny. Yeah, we got that's four. Yeah, we have four that rotate. And so we run through them. And they've been pretty hot. And they certainly beat the hell out of me because, I'm going to pretend to handicap for you here shortly. I consider myself a better host and journalist than I do a handicapper, in part because of results.
A student of past performances you are in your own way. Then I was going to guess Chris Felica was somebody you might have on the air from time to time, just given his deep association with VSIN and our mutual friend Gil Alexander.
Yeah, and I've known Chris for a long time. When I was at ESPN going back to 1992, that was when I got to ESPN, and Chris got there, I don't know, it was around that time, and so we struck up a friendship of sorts at that time. I think we even played poker together, one all-nighter years later, that kind of you know, spun me away from poker, because I think I still might owe Chris money from that particular night. But yeah, I mean, we used to talk about college football before he became the Bear. And so, yeah, I go way back with Chris and his roommates. I'm trying to remember now. I'm blanking on his name, and this is horrible because at my age, I blank on names. Oh, Brad Edwards. And Peter Saccone, who's the news director at ESPN Radio, they were roommates. They were housemates. So you go visit one, you visited all three. And a good time was always had by all when we got together.
That's fantastic stuff. I want to get another quick word on what you've been doing over at Horse Racing Nation. Then we're going to dive into these races and look ahead to this Derby Future Pool number 7. But tell us about the HRN work and where that can be found.
Yeah, well, when we actually went into the whole sports were gone for a while mode, I suddenly had a lot of time on my hands, and VSIN was kind enough to allow me to extend myself to other places that might be able to avail themselves of my writing. And so I've been writing for Horse Racing Nation for several months now. And so it's general assignment sort of things. We do barn tours, and when Churchill Downs the other day decided that it was going to invoke, although I guess they're sort of doing it with a toe in the water but not all the way in, the August 24th rule for jockeys to be in the Commonwealth if they want to ride Derby Week. We were out in front of that story, and so I was news hunting in that regard. Feature, I think, posting today on the New York Racing Association TV duo of the aforementioned Andy Serling and Tom Amos. Are they as snarky with each other as the Dunphy sisters and the Harper brothers were on sitcoms of recent visage? So we get into that a little bit, too. So it's a lot of writing I'm doing for HRN, and it's been a lot of fun. It's given me a chance to get back on my old deadline writing chops of my early days in this.
Fantastic. It's good. You know, we're all kind of utility players in this game between audio, video, and writing. Let's talk about these races real fast, Ron. Mm-hmm. I maybe you'll be a little more creative than I am. We're going to start off talking about Del Mar's sixth race on Saturday, scheduled for 6:40 Eastern time. The grade two best pal. We've got two-year-olds going 6 furlongs on the dirt, and I've already tipped my hand with my uncreative remark about who I like, but I'm curious to know if you have anything a little bit more creative in the best pal.
Well, we're about to find out. Not a huge price on the morning line, but I see two words there that Hank Goldberg, who, of course, I used to work with at WQAM in Miami more years ago than I care to remember, and who lives here in Las Vegas now. I remember him at a Preakness one day. We're up at Pimlico in the press box, and he looks at me and goes, flat, two words. Blinkers off. And with that, I'm looking at herd immunity for this race. Look, not only because of that, but there's a fair amount of speed in this race, as you would hope there would be in a sprint. But as I look at that, I think it could break down. I see, so, you know, look, you're dealing with two-year-olds, and so you kind of wonder how far they can extend it, especially going from, say, 4.5 to 6 furlongs, as some of them are in this race. I look at herd immunity coming off the third-place finish in the Bashford Manor, and I wonder if this is a case where you look at that field and this one may not be as tough as that one was. I look at him also having the speed in front of him set up better than it did before. So maybe he'll be closer to the lead. Maybe he'll be a little in a relaxed sense because with the blinkers on, he didn't really fire the last time out. And so let's see what happens with the blinkers off. Maybe just suddenly feels like, hey, the world's around me. It's free. I can just go ahead and have a fun run here. I look at that last race, and he was trying to run 1:45 flat. And look, I think the speed could be the same again here this time, but I think the blinkers off will be a factor. It's Peter Miller, who, you know, has a couple horses in this race. Abel Cedillo, who is certainly, you know, making a name for himself this summer, as he has during the entire year in Southern California. And I'm wondering if it's going to be 7-2, because I'm thinking the money could certainly go elsewhere. And the other thing I also look at here is this is a horse that's coming home. Maybe just didn't like Churchill Downs, and so coming back to Del Mar, I think, could be really good here. So chasing the pace, coming maybe with that first run on the turn, I'm going to look at herd immunity, the number 5 horse in the 6th race.
Makes sense to me. My boring pick is number 4, Roderick, who I presume will be a fairly heavy favorite. I just thought looked very tough off that maiden score. Only a short field in there, but the form's working out well. The race came back strong visually and on the clock. good pedigree to progress further, and no apparent world beaters sign on. I do like your idea of herd immunity as an alternative with the blinkers off of that idea of maybe being able to sit and finish, because I think Roderick will be the speed of the speed, and I would not mind having a little bit of a backup with a horse who we can make a case is going to be able to pass a fast horse. Maybe the blinkers off will be the ticket for yours, but it's number four, Roderick, for me. And with that, let's move on to our ninth race at Del Mar on Saturday. It goes at 9:10 Eastern time. The Grade 2 Yellow Ribbon. We've got fillies and mares, three and up, going a mile and a 16th on the turf. And Ron, who did you like in this spot?
Yeah, not as much speed in this race as there was in the earlier race. And so as I look at this, I got a couple I'm looking at here. Look, I can't get around Keeper of the Stars. And I really think that she could be bet into being the favorite in this one. She met up with a couple of the other horses in this race in an earlier start. But as I look at this, in her win in the Wilshire, I don't think there was that much pace in the Wilshire, but you know, look, you can't get around, and that's why she finished fifth, I think, because there wasn't enough pace at the front end. Two previous wins, the Gamely, obviously, I mean, that speaks for itself, the Buena Vista. So I can't look around that. I've got to include Keeper of the Stars, but the other one I'm going to look at here to throw in, and hopefully at a nice price, is Boisita for Richie Baltus, coming off the second place finish in the Gamely to Keeper of the Stars. So, you know, look, familiar exacta from that standpoint there. I think 6-1 would be an overlay for this horse. If I get 6-1, I may be pushing a couple more shekels into the till in that particular case. So, look, you got Flavian Pratt here. Three out of four before the Gamely. And also cutting back and dropping a couple of pounds. So that can't hurt. Flavian Pratt being here is so influential. And that's why I'm a little bit worried that bettors are going to see that and pour more money in. So I'm hoping I'm getting 6-1 there. I admit I'm attracted by the price to a great degree. I saw 6-1 and I thought that is an overlay. My big concern in terms of the pace style in this race, will there be enough for her to come after in this one? Because she is a stone cold closer. But, you know, across my fingers, I admit it. I am chasing a price a little bit here. The pace might not be ideal, but I don't know that it's going to be I don't know that we're going to be without somebody out front that could give us some fractions early on that could come into play. Also, like I said, cutting back from a mile and an eighth to a mile and a 16th, it's not a big cutback, so I think that could be beneficial as well, even though it is a closer needing more distance, you would think. But look, you got the right jockey on here. He'll know when to push the button in this race. So again, I'm looking at the 6 and the 2 and hoping the 2 comes with a nice price.
It sounds like that's a really good point about the pace, because the presumptive pace setter, there's some scuttlebutt around, maybe scratching anyway, in Jolie Olympico. And if that ends up being the case, it could be a bit of a crawl. But it could be a – sometimes your closer gets invited into the race on the crawl, though. So it might work – it could work to your advantage, but that is certainly going to affect – if that goes down, that will certainly affect those morning line prices and what we can expect in terms of market value.
And I might add, with Jolie Olympica, for me, she's almost a toss. I might look at her at the bottom end of a trifecta. She, to me, is a sprinter. And the moment you go from that, you get to that eighth furlong with her, things start to erode a little bit. Now you're looking at a mile and a 16th. And I'm just looking, the last time she ran that far in a race would be never. So I'm wondering if that distance factor here really comes back and bites for Richie Mandela and Mike Smith. We'll see soon enough. Look, this horse has never been worse than second, I think. But again, went this far last time out, I see, in the Jenny Wiley, right? So that's a mile and a 16th, and finished second, faded to second after setting the pace. And that's the other part. Like you said, if she scratches out of the race, maybe I have to go back to the drawing board a little bit. But like I said, though, she's in, I have her out off my tickets.
That's a bold call. We'll see what ends up happening. But I think you'll be compensated in price for your opinions. For me, looking at this race, my first thought going down the PPs was that the local horsemen were probably very happy not to see any Chad Brown entries. but they do have to deal with a Brad Cox entry, which leads us to number 7, Bo Recall. This one I thought came home very strongly last time against Newspaper of Record, one of the, if there were an anti-post market for the Breeders' Cup Mile, Newspaper of Record's name would be at or near the top of it. And I just felt like it, in this field, Bo Recall, best form in figures. And I'm just always a sucker for grade one East Coast turf form moving west. Another one, though, you know, the pace scenario isn't going to be doing Bo Recall any favors either. So we'll see what happens.
Well, that's, although, didn't do her any favors the last time out. I mean, you're looking at, what, 48, 112, and 1? I mean, that's, you know, that's not exactly burning it up either on what was firm turf at Belmont. And so I think she overachieved when I look at that last race. I think that she just kind of fell into a spot like you were suggesting could happen with closers, that, you know, it's not always a burner pace that allows closers to close. And I remember watching that race and thinking, what is Bo Recall doing there when these fractions are coming up so short? So, yeah, I think the pace scenario could happen again that way, especially if Jolie Olympica is out. I'm just looking here. Well, Harmless could set an early pace. I don't think that she has enough to be able to finish the Phil D'Amato horse that's now bounced around on the claiming circuit, but or at least through claims or at least switches or whatever. I mean, you know, whatever the case, this is now going to be, you know, she was claimed and now goes from Michelle Lavelle to Phil D'Amato. So, yeah, that's the case. Okay. Maybe I have a little hope here that there's something to chase at least early on. I just worry about what it's going to look like when they get to the turn.
I'll mention Summering as one who could be an interesting pace influence in the event that Jolie Olympica comes out of there. I might mess around with those two, the 1 and the 7. But, Ron, we only have a few more minutes of your time, and I want to get your thoughts on the Kentucky Derby future pool. We've got pool number 7 coming up paramutually from Churchill Downs this weekend. And I also know there are various places in your current state of Nevada that are offering futures. I was just curious if you had any thoughts about either the morning line on this paramutual version of the future pool or anything available around town right now that listeners should be paying attention to.
It was funny when I was talking with Andy Serling about the futures, we fleshed it out, and I was wondering if I should go in on Caracaro. I could get him at 55-1 to win the Derby, and I thought, you know, he'll be shorter than that if he gets into the Derby, but not a lot shorter. And then I thought, and then Andy said, you better jump on that 55-1 because you could be looking at half that or shorter when you get to the Derby. And so I have, you're not going to get that. Well, the Kentucky Derby future wager morning line says 50. It all depends on what he does in the Travers. And look, I always 100%. Say this about the paramutual future wager, which of the Kentucky Derby future wager, you're going to watch and wait. And I think the interesting thing is all those horses not named Art Collector who are in the Ellis Park Derby are sitting at 50-1 on the morning line. And there's nothing that's going to be able to influence that because the Ellis Park Derby is going to go off 10 minutes after the future wager closes on Sunday.
Interesting.
So if you're waiting
note.
To see, so if you're going to wait to see the result of that race to influence how you'll bet, you'll be too late. And so really what you're doing is taking a chance on, really, you're betting as much on the Ellis Park Derby if you bet on one of those horses as you are on the Kentucky Derby. There could be some value there. Two ways to look at it. You could say it's a head-scratcher. Why didn't the Ellis Park Derby folks move the race earlier? Churchill hold the end of the futures until maybe another hour. Whatever. That's not going to be the case. So that makes this unique for a final future in the Derby pool because you won't have all of the information that you normally would want before you make that bet. I will say this. Best advice to you, and I think we should be unanimous on this, if you're going to bet on the Kentucky Derby future wager, at least wait until the Travers is done so you can have an idea of what the paramutuals will look like. And like any horse race, this is the same as any race. Wait until the last hour, half hour, 15 minutes, especially if you're at home. You're not getting locked out. So, you know, keep an eye on those numbers. But I think with the Ellis Park Derby horses, especially if you've got a thought on one that could come out of there and really make some noise in the Kentucky Derby, if you really got some confidence, I think you look to those horses other than Art Collector. And even at that, Art Collector showing up, 6-1 on the morning line. If he wins and if Uncle Chuck beats Tis the Law in the Travers, you've got a three-way fight to be the Derby favorite. And I think the winner between Uncle Chuck and Tis the Law between them, if one of them wins the Travers, that's going to be your post-time Derby favorite. And it's going to be reflected in the futures. I don't think you touch Tis the Law. 9-5, and it could be if Tis the Law wins the Travers, 9-5 will be a bargain. You won't see 9-5. He won't close 9-5. Here in Las Vegas, +235 at Circa and 2-1 at William Hill. And I think if he goes ahead and wins the Travers, those will be overlays if you get those on Derby Day itself.
Good stuff, Ron. Great analysis. Fantastic to have you visiting. We will, you know, no good deed goes unpunished around here. We will surely have you back on the airwaves soon. Check out Ron at VSiN, at Horse Racing Nation, and also on Twitter. Hit us up with your Twitter handle real quick for those listening.
At Ron Flatter. Real original. I actually got on that when Twitter first started. There's actually a club DJ in Germany named Ron Flatter. I got to it before he did.
Oh, so he's Ron Flatter, you know, 1991 or whatever, and you get the proper handle.
A much younger one, yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, my friend. Really appreciate your time today. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. What fun to have this fantastic array of guests on today, and we'll thank them one more time. Travis Stone, Jason Portuondo, and Ron Flatter. Also want to thank our title sponsors from Racing Picks, racingpicks.com. You definitely want to go and check them out. Remember, I'm going to have a special column with my thoughts on Sunday's racing. You can get it. All you got to do is navigate over to racingpicks.com, give them your email, and you'll have access to my Sunday column, as well as great work by the likes of Matt Bernier and Andrew Champagne on a regular basis. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you for listening, for watching, for making these shows so much fun to do. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos. I can do it.